expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome back to The Drive Time. My guests in the studio are Gloria Peters-Matthies and Hillary Veely. They are with Better Together Refugee Sponsorships right here in Northumberland County. And of course, as always, Rob Washburn is joining us for our weekly installment of Consider This Live. Before we get to our guests, here is Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers with Refugee right here on Northumberland 89.7. We'll be right back. Petty and the Heartbreakers with Refugee. If you haven't guessed it, that's our conversation this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the resettlement of Syrian families here in Northumberland County. Just to recap what I mentioned earlier, folks, the Resource Committee on Refugee Sponsorship and Resettlement in Northumberland County is a core group of government and community agencies that provides support and coordination to refugee sponsorship groups, as well as support to resettlement when sponsored families arrive here in our community. At present, there are about 13 groups that are sponsoring roughly 18 to 20 refugee families. These are families, folks, not just individuals. Joining me in the studio right now are representatives from Better Together Refugee Sponsorship Group, which is a partnership of eight churches, including the Calvary Baptist, the Church on the Hill, Coburg Alliance, the Fellowship Baptist, Grace Christian Reformed, the Grace Evangelical Missionary, the Salvation Army, the Coburg Community Church, and St. Andrew's Presbyterian. With me in studio, Gloria Peters-Matthies and Hillary Vili. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for having us again.
Yeah, we are very happy to have you guys. Now, before we went to air, we were talking about how it's going, and at one point Hillary said, this is like a full-time job now. And I guess it would be, wouldn't it?
It is. It's very exciting work. Mm-hmm. But definitely the momentum in the community is such that we're just, working on this a lot.
Well, how are things going? And I mean, you guys, now your groups, you're one of the first groups that started. Am I correct on that? Here in the county? Like the first one or two anyway?
I believe so, because we've been at this for over a year now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How's it been going? I mean, obviously a steep learning curve for you guys.
Oh, absolutely. And the one thing that we've said over and over, the one constant is that things change mm-hmm. all the time. And so, the learning curve, just as we think we've learned something, something will change and we have to relearn. And there's just so much that we've never done this before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Are the changes, and some changes I know the federal government have been making of late, they've sort of been quietly being made. How difficult are those changes to adapt to when you're sort of already on a path?
I think that we really just have to roll with the punches. It's one of those things where some of the recent changes may affect the amount of time that it takes for some of the families we've applied for to actually arrive mm-hmm. In the community. But we just do what we can, and then sometimes it's a waiting game.
How does the application process work? I mean, you've been at it for over a year. And I know, I believe we spoke before the end of last year, if I remember correctly.
That's right? Correct.
So, I mean, how many families were you able to get, and I hate to use this term, but how many families were you able to get in the pipeline, as it were, before the end of fiscal year 2015? Because the new changes come into effect as of end of February, right? So mm-hmm. Were you able to get any of that paperwork really sort of pushed through before the end of last year?
Yeah, we have applied for three families at this point. Two of the families arrived in early February, mm-hmm. and so they've been here for about a month and a half. Our third family, we're just waiting to hear when their arrival date will be. We just found out recently that there's a little bit more processing that has to happen at their end, so we're not quite sure when they'll arrive. But the application process went in before the end of February. The next four families will have happened after that.
How much lead time is there between you filing the application and because I mean when you file the application, it's not like there's a list of families and you can go, yes, we'll take those people and we'll take these people, because you don't really get to decide who the family is, right?
Depending on the type of sponsorship we pursue, we sometimes have choice and sometimes have very little. Mm-hmm. And so basically the amount of lead time then also is dependent on the type of sponsorship. So for the type of sponsorship that we pursued with the first three families, which is a blended visa office referred, where the government does give a small portion of the funds needed to resettle the family, and then the community raises the rest. And then there's also private sponsorships.
Can you tell us what it was like when you met the first family?
Mm-hmm. It was amazing. For Hillary and I, we made a conscious decision to let the core teams decide who was going to be with the families and who isn't. Mm-hmm. So we didn't invite ourselves to go and meet with them, although we wanted to. When they arrived back in Coburg, one of the people from the core team texted us and said, you got to come. So we were able to meet them on the first day. And I think for both of us, when we met them, we both cried. It was just, mm-hmm. it was like all this time that we had been preparing for this. I sort of likened it to a birth. We'd been preparing mm-hmm. for so long, and then suddenly labor happened and they came in. And it was just such a joyous, amazing time.
Can you describe the interactions that took place? Where were you and what happened?
We were sitting in just a small living room, just sitting around in a circle. A few of the core team members who are caring for this family over the 12-month period that mm-hmm. they're sponsored, and then Gloria and myself, the family members, and we just, you know, small talk. We were getting to know each other, kind of sharing a little bit about our families, kids.
We had a translator.
We had a translator, so that really helped. And we also, I mean, probably one of the most amazing moments was the mom just looking into our eyes and thanking us through tears, just saying she is so relieved that her children are safe.
Can we get an idea of what type of a life they are leaving? I mean, we had gentlemen in here before from that were Syrian refugees. They had left their homes and basically been living in Egypt, I think, for 2 years. And for them, I mean, there was a complete lack of stability. They were out of the war zone. Mm-hmm. But there was this angst and this fact mm-hmm. that they were in limbo. And when they came here, I mean, they both said the same thing. You know, our goal is to get back home. We want to go back. Mm-hmm. They had a strong business that was vital there. They were in a manufacturing business that they owned. And so they were, you know, sort of upwardly mobile, if you will, or affluent, I guess, for their community. And that's all gone for them. So can you give us an idea as to some of the stories that you've heard in terms of how, you know, what life was like for these people before they got here? Because I think part of the problem for a lot of people when it comes to dealing with this idea of bringing in refugees is trying to wrap their head around who are these people?
Well, really, if you can picture your own family and what you might do on a daily basis, you know, you work, your kids want to go to school, they're, mm-hmm. you know, doing, you know, the kids are going through their schooling, they're in their normal grades that they should be, doing very well at school, excelling, and, yeah, working, just, yeah, taking care of their homes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what it's like in terms of the routines that they've gotten into. Can you maybe share with us, have the kids gotten into school, what sort of status they're at right now, or what sort of stage they're at right now in terms of their integration?
So all the kids are in school. They've been in school for probably close to a month now. The parents are, up until next week, have been getting once a week ESL. A tutor has been going in and spending time with them once a week. Next week, the county has is beginning daily ESL classes, which will be amazing. So every day our the adults and the families will be able to go to ESL classes. The first few weeks have been crazy busy with appointments, doctor's appointments, appointments to get different cards, like health cards and different things like that, immigration appointments, just all kinds of appointments. It was almost like there was something happening daily. That started to slow down now. Mm-hmm. They were looking for permanent accommodation, and they both families now have permanent accommodation. Mm-hmm. So there was the move to happen, and it's been a very, very busy time for them.
I know one of the things that you've been able to do before they arrived was to collect furniture and clothing. How has that worked out? Has that been useful, or how does that put all together?
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful resource to have our storage facility with all of the donations that people have given. The families have had access to that to be able to choose some things for their places, both temporarily and then now they're moving into more permanent locations. Mm-hmm. So they're able to, yeah, choose what they need. And, yeah, it's worked out well. Mm-hmm. We've been so grateful for all of the donations, all the community support, and our fundraising. Yeah,
it's been incredible.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, dealing with immigration and things like that. Is there an immigration office here in Coburg, or where is it you have to go?
Toronto.
You have to go to Toronto. Yeah. So there isn't even anything prepared or ready here through Service Canada to help these folks.
Some of the things they can do through Service Canada, but their actual immigration appointment had to be in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. How difficult has that been? I mean, it's a new country. We don't live near, I mean, we're near Toronto, I guess an hour and a half away. How has that been for these folks to have to deal with regards to the commute and getting used to the fact that, you know, Toronto, because again, you know, it may only be an hour and a half in our minds, but it's 100 or so kilometers. And, you know, when you're coming from a part of the world where that's a huge distance, Mm-hmm. Has that been something that you've spoken to them on that issue? Has that been a problem for them? Or is that just something they're like, hey, you know, we can't believe how convenient it is?
Well, thankfully, the immigration appointment, there was just one appointment. So it was just that one trip to Toronto. And most of the other things is happening locally. And the core teams that are working with them have been really good about explaining everything to them. And they've been walking through the things with them. And so they're really great. They sit down and explain everything with an interpreter. You know, this is what to expect. This is what we're going to do today. This is what we're going to do tomorrow. This is what it's going to look like. And mm-hmm.
Any I know we asked this before we went to air, but approximately how many families have arrived so far?
I mean, in the county?
In the county, because I know according to the list they had here, they're looking between 18 and 20 families, and that's not individuals, that's families. So we've already brought in...
Yeah, so we had thought between 5 and 6 have arrived at this point in the county. There could be a few more. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we'll be having lunch with a few of the families that have arrived across the county and RMP, Kim Redd. So that'll be a wonderful time just to gather together and celebrate really what's going on and also what's to come.
How has she been helpful in terms of making this easier?
One of the things that we've been doing is having regular conversations with somebody from her office, just especially recently with the new changes that are happening. And they've been able to kind of keep us updated on what's happening and, you know, how they're connected with John McCallum's office and just helping us through those questions.
Right. Well, you know what? We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. As always, this is our live version of Consider This with Rob Washburn, my regular co-host. And joining us in studio are Gloria Peters-Matthies and Hilary Vealey. And they are with Better Together Refugee Sponsorships here in Northumberland County, in Cobourg, actually. You ladies are both from Cobourg, I understand. Mm-hmm. We are going to take our quick break, as I say. And when we come back, we'll have more of our conversation on refugees here in Northumberland County. And welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. With me in studio are representatives of Better Together Refugee Sponsorships right here in Northumberland County, Gloria Peters-Matthies and Hilary Vealey. And they are just two women from 13 groups here that are representing the residents in Northumberland County and throwing the doors open for some Syrian refugees who are fleeing the turmoil that is their home and coming here. Obviously, their goal is to get back home. Let's talk about, if we can, some of the hurdles that you had. We talked about the idea of having to talk through an interpreter. Let's talk about the interpreters, though, because they are obviously performing some incredible, I would say, yeoman service here for these folks who have who volunteered. And these are volunteers who are helping out here. I understand that a couple of the people that we're working with as volunteers are new Canadians themselves. They didn't come here as refugees. And I think one of the things you mentioned was that when they got here, there really wasn't anyone to help them. And that's part of the reason why they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's really been amazing is we keep thanking them for all the work they're doing because we really couldn't do what we're doing without their amazing support. And, you know, they're rearranging their schedules and their busy lives to really try and to help. And so we keep saying, thank you for what you're doing. And they look at us and they say, thank you for what you're doing, bringing, you know, these people here. So it really is just this amazing partnership with them. And we're grateful.
Where did you find these people to help translate?
They actually found us.
Cool.
They heard about us and they connected with us. And I just want to add to what Hilary was saying. They have said to us, you know, if you have to go in the middle of the night to the airport to pick up anybody, call us. We'll be there. It doesn't matter. You know, we will do whatever you need us to do.
Have you either of you learned any phrases that you might want to share with us?
One of the things that they say a lot is inshallah, which means God willing. Mm-hmm. So we talk about future plans. We say, oh, tomorrow we're going to have lunch, or the next day, you know, we're going to go to this appointment. And they say, inshallah. And it's just this, it's a constant reminder that, God willing, this will happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we tend to make our plans and just go for it. But they're very reverent in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's got to be difficult, something that they have to now readjust to, the fact that they can make plans. You know, I mean, even if they're just plans for the immediate future, at least they have a plan, or at least can plan for their future. That's something that was a luxury, I can only imagine, wherever they were. Do we have any idea as to where some of these families are, in fact, coming from? As I said, the two gentlemen we had in here had basically been refugees, but they've been living in Egypt. not in any type of permanent capacity. I mean, the one guy said they were basically living with friends, doing what is really the international version of the couch tour, you know. Mm-hmm. And do we have any ideas? I know we can't talk specifically about the families, and I appreciate that. But we got any ideas to some of the places these people have come from? Are we getting people from some of these nasty camps that we hear about?
Yeah, so refugee camps in Jordan and Lebanon and Turkey are primarily where a lot of these high-risk families are being referred to this program and mm-hmm. then are receiving these sponsorships.
Have you heard anything about what life was like for them over there? Have you shared any of those stories? Again, without being too specific.
Right, yeah. One story that we could share is one family was living very close to the Syrian border, and although they were safe in a sense of being outside of Syria, they could actually hear the bombs, and they could actually feel the ground shaking when the bombs would go off. And so it was just a constant reminder of what they had to leave. Mm-hmm. Just constantly in their face.
I also don't know that we necessarily realize when we talk about these camps, you know, we think, well, you know, at least they're out of their country where there's war, they're safe. But really, yeah, just the reality of what these camps are is just horrible.
Well, it's horrific. It's just horrific. I mean, the available space for an individual there, I think I read a report from the UN in one of the camps in Jordan, and they were saying that there's basically four people per square foot in these camps. That's how tightly packed these people are and living spaces. And it's sort of, if there's a tent available or you're lucky enough to be able to bring one, usually they're set up by whoever is providing the aid. And it's just impossible to find any type of, you know, privacy or cling to anything that is sort of individual.
Well, and imagine having your children in that setting. Young children, your teens, kids, you know, want to go to school.
What have been some of the challenges that you've faced as you've worked with them over the last month to integrate them into the community?
One of the things that has been a big challenge is just the language. And oftentimes we think that we've communicated something and we sort of get the head nod on the other side, but it's not really understood. Mm-hmm. And so just really making sure and making sure that the interpreter knows what we're saying so they can interpret it properly. And so that communication has been a little bit of a challenge. Also just the cultural pieces too, things that we have an expectation for might be very, very different. Even in terms of what a great home would be. You know, like mm-hmm. we have an idea of what a great home would be. And, you know, we think, oh, this is nice. It's got some privacy. It's got, you know, some space or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas for them, it might be, you know, there's too much space around. I'm really nervous about what's out there, you know. And I'm used to having lots of noise and traffic and people around. And so there's just different mm-hmm. expectations and different cultural things.
Right. Well, we're used to the broad spaces here. We live in Canada, right? I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of the population when it comes to putting people in this country. So that's obviously something that is, I guess, a blessing, but overwhelming at the same time. I mean, these people come from densely populated countries, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
We were talking about the camps earlier. I just wanted to say that we saw a picture of one of the camps in Jordan, I believe, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And it's the fourth largest city, in quotations, in Jordan, in terms of population.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the struggle for some of the kids? Because, I mean, and the families as well. But, I mean, for kids growing up in this type of conflict, we know the trauma that came, for instance, when the boat people came here in the 70s. We really didn't understand what we were dealing with. But now we have a better handle. At least they should have a better handle anyway on the trauma and the psychological impact of that trauma and the possible long-term effects. How are we dealing with that, especially with the children? I mean, they've now got to start school, as you say, and now they're going to integrate with some of the other kids in the community. How do they handle that?
What's been really amazing about this community is that in our preparations, we had, for example, Port Hope Community Health Center step up and say, we would love to provide trauma services to these families. We also have support workers in the schools who are helping these kids really get integrated and to, as issues arise, that are dealing with them immediately and checking in and seeing how they're doing. So within Northumberland, I think that we're seeing a lot of this support that's already ready to go. And certainly for the kids that are here, they're already receiving that. And so that's been really encouraging for us, then knowing we're bringing the families and that it's not just us doing the work, that it really is a network and a community of people.
That's really interesting, because one of the things I wanted to find out was that when we last talked to you, there was a huge mobilization of the community to both raise money and to collect things and to participate. How has that sustained since we last spoke to you?
How has
the community involvement, has it been sustained?
Is it just as vibrant now as it was at the beginning, or has it started to wane because it's taking time?
Up until this point, it's absolutely still there. Yeah, the community is still welcoming. There's just been such a real welcoming spirit in the community, and that hasn't waned. That we've seen.
Is there anything, though, that you still need or needs to be done that maybe people can step up to do?
For our Better Together group, we had a fundraising goal of $250,000 to bring in the 7 families. We're only $15,000 away from that goal.
Wow.
So that's really exciting. The community and the churches have really stepped up to pull that. I know many other groups maybe also are looking just to top up their fundraising. So that might be a way to look into either this group or groups that are fundraising to see if, you know, you can just get them to the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Will you carry on the fundraising beyond the 250, or once you hit that, are you going to stop?
We most likely will, because when we're pursuing private sponsorships, if that's the route we take, sometimes they cost just that little bit more. Then, yeah.
So you're going to go beyond the 250,000 then?
Potentially. We're sort of taking it one step at a time.
Sure.
Well, and again, you can always go to the website, folks. The website is www.bettertogetherpartnership.org. And you can get involved there. You can donate there. You can also find out about some of the events. Throughout 2016, this is on the website. Throughout 2016, Boston Pizza at Northumberland Mall is donating 10% off your bill to Better Together upon request. Be sure to write Better Together Refugee Sponsorship on your bill, and they will donate 10% of that bill here. So again, these are just some of the community partners. Now, of course, recently there have been the Paris attacks and what's happened also in Brussels. Has there been any backlash? Are we hearing anything? Has anyone in the community, I mean, you know, you hear what's going on, you know, you got Donald Trump saying he wants to kick all the Muslims out or vet them all, and we don't have that hate rhetoric up here, but certainly there must be some impact. Has that been a negative impact? Are we seeing any of that in this community towards these people or towards bringing any other people in the community?
If there is, we haven't experienced it personally.
Okay, good. No, good.
I would say that it's been an overwhelmingly positive response from this community, to the point where when people are seeing these families around town, they are walking up to them to hug them and welcome them. And they, you know, one woman, they were in Pizza Pizza, and she said, "I'll be right back," and then brought them this bag of hand-knit mittens and gloves and hats for them. There was a story of, them walking into a hardware store and somebody wanting to purchase the item that they needed there. So just stories like this where just people want to go out of their way actually to be welcoming.
So we're not seeing any of that backlash then, not in this community anyway. And really, I mean, if we look at what's happening across the country, we have heard it in Europe, for instance, where Europeans are slamming the door on Syrian refugees. I mean, they were supposed to have 1 million refugees brought into Europe in the last 6 months of 2015, and they brought in 1,500. So the bulk of these people are stranded, you know, in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Turkey. And now the new regulations with the EU is saying, well, we're going to send these people back to Turkey. Obviously, the fact that we are willing to embrace the Syrian refugees the way we have has been a bonus. Are you hearing anything from these Syrian families about what they're hearing abroad? And I mean, I'm not asking if they're saying, oh, my goodness, thank God we're here. But what are they hearing?
I haven't actually heard anything from them about what they're hearing from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard anything?
I haven't. The one thing I would say is that I know that really, it's been so amazing to see how they've also wanted to embrace the culture here. Mm-hmm. So there has been an interesting aspect of we want to be respectful of where they're coming from and really give them every opportunity to practice their culture, which they do and they share with us. But at the same time, they ask many questions about life here and really want to embrace mm-hmm. Their new future.
Can you give us some examples? I'd be really interested.
What's the one question you're hearing from these folks about Canadian culture?
I think it's in conversation. Mm-hmm. We compare food. We talk about, you know, maybe differences in religions. We compare even just there's actually a lot of cool similarities, too.
Like what?
Well, for example, we have gotten together with the families for these potlucks. And so a few of the families get together. The translators come. The teams that are supporting them, we all get together. And what's really funny is, you know, how sometimes in social gatherings, you know, the women will sit on one side and the mm-hmm. men on the other. And we just kind of want to converse. Well, that happens there, too. And we sort of laugh about it and say, you know, this is the same for us. Like, we enjoy, you know, the women love to talk and the men love to do their thing. And so there is... Yeah, just some interesting similarities. Mm.
Sort of natural separation of the sexes, which goes with any culture, really.
Yeah. Mm.
That's really kind of intriguing because, again, they must realize that people are the same around the world. When they can have that type of experience here, having to travel, you know, thousands of miles to come to this country to embrace a life for themselves.
It's really interesting, too, how food always is a common thing. True. When you can get together around food mm-hmm. and share some time.
Absolutely.
What have you experienced then that's been new and exciting from their side of the culture? What have you done that's...
One of the potlucks that we were at, the men were in the kitchen and the women were in the living room. And after we had eaten, we started talking about dance and, you know, what a cultural dance is for them. And the women ended up just dancing around the coffee table in the living room. And it was just so much fun. And we all fell down laughing. And it just was so much fun. And they loved being able to share that with us. And we loved sharing it with mm-hmm. us.
One of the things that I think has been a challenge on the flip side is really that their culture is so family and neighbor oriented. Mm-hmm. And so something that we are learning from them is, and I think something that they continually ask us is, will you come and visit? Mm. And for us, you know, we tend to go to our jobs and then go home and turn off the lights and go to bed. And we silo ourselves mm-hmm. and we tend to be a more isolated culture.
Individualistic
culture. Mm-hmm. And so what we've been really learning with this culture is that it's very community oriented. Having family or neighbors drop by all the time is very normal. And in fact, for them to spend a long time alone at home during the day is really hard. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be sensitive to that. And it's challenging me for sure as I want to be supportive of these families. At the same time, we seem to really value in this culture this sort of, well, it's my time or my family time, or mm-hmm. we're so protective of it and not as open as I think we could be.
And to that point, I think that's something that's evolved in my mind anyway, in a negative sense. Because, you know, we always talk about safety in communities, and I've talked, and you and I have both talked about this on our show, Rob. You know, the best way to have a safe community is to get to know your neighbors. You know, I moved into a house in Scarborough. My wife and I went across the street, introduced ourselves to the neighbors. The woman had been living there for 35 years and had never, ever had a neighbor knock on her door. Mm. And that's not only an important part of the culture, it's also an important part of security, right? I mean, if you want to have safe streets and safe neighborhoods, you know, the best way is to get to know your neighbors. And, you know, I said to my a friend recently who is living in Toronto in a big building, and they've got a number of people who've moved there, just arrived from this war-torn region. And they're out there getting to know their neighbors. And then people are like, what's going on? And I reminded them, I said, look, you live in an 18-story building. That's 18 neighborhoods. Each one of those floors is a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And yet you don't know who the lady across the hall is from you. Mm-hmm. They said, so, you know, this is about building community. And that's what that is about. It's not just mm-hmm. family. It's about building community. And that's obviously helping them embrace our community as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm also curious about children. I know you have a family. How have your children been experiencing this?
Well, it's been really interesting. My children are young, but my four-year-old actually really enjoys playing with some of the kids that are here. One day, we went tobogganing with them. It was their first experience tobogganing.
Right.
And coincidentally, it was actually my daughter's first experience tobogganing. So we kind of shared this first together. And, I mean, they were right in there and just really enjoying it. I think kids have a really amazing way of just embracing and jumping in, and they don't have those reserves that we do as adults. Mm-hmm. And so it's so amazing. It's such an easy bridge with the families to be able to, you know, bring my kids into their living room, and they immediately embrace them and are playing with them. And that's just beautiful to me.
Wow. Well, we're going to take our next break, but when we come back, we'll have more of our discussion on refugees here in Northumberland County, what we're doing here to welcome these new Canadians and welcome these visitors, because as I said earlier, their goal, obviously, for most of them is to be able to go back home. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. We will be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guests in studio are Gloria Peters-Matthies and Hilary Vili, and they are both with Better Together Refugee Sponsorships here in Northumberland County. Also, of course, Rob Washburn is here. He is my regular co-host for our weekly versions of ConsiderThis.ca, Consider-This.ca. Rob, welcome back. You've got the first question.
Thanks, Dave. I'd like to know what's left to be done now. Now that you've got them here and they're settling, what's the agenda as you move forward?
Well, we have two of our families here, and we have five more that we're hoping to bring in. So we're still waiting for the third. We have started the application process for our fourth family. Our core teams 5 and 6 are ready to start the application process for the next two after that. And then a little bit later, we'll start our seventh.
Dave mentioned earlier that there's been some changes in terms of the government's approach to this. Can we just go over that again? Because I don't know how specific can you be about how these changes are affecting you? Because the 25,000 came in real fast, and now they're saying the whole process is slowing down. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how that works for you?
Well, realistically, it just affects the time that it takes to process the applications, and then that we wait to actually receive the families here in our community. So to give you a concrete example, when they were expediting the Syrian profiles, mm-hmm. we were seeing basically by the time we had applied, a 1 to 3 month turnaround mm-hmm. Was what we could expect before the family would actually be here on our doorstep. That will change for that type of sponsorship to around 3 to 6 months. So it's a little bit longer. It's not exponentially longer, but mm-hmm. it is a little bit longer.
How do you feel about these changes and what the government's done?
Like Hilary said earlier, we just have to roll with it. And we've come to expect that change is always going to happen. We would love it if things could be expedited for all the families like they were for the first ones. But that's just not the reality of it. So we just have to go with what's
happening. And you have no other concerns about it in terms of policy or where the government stands?
There's always that unknown factor where we could wake up tomorrow and things could be different. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've learned is that there's definitely challenges and there's definitely discouragements along the way. And mm-hmm. we don't want to sugarcoat it and say this has been, you know, all a really wonderful experience, because there's those challenges. There's those hard times where we have to really sit back and reflect, why am I doing this? Why mm-hmm. why is this community doing this? And we really have to come back to, you know, we feel really called to be where we are and to be helping these families. And this is the right thing to do, that ultimately we will see the good fruit in the end for these families.
Can we get an idea of what some of those frustrations have been? I mean, other than policy changes by the government, I mean, have any of those frustrations had anything to do with the county, for instance, and regulations there? I mean, what?
Not at all. I would say primarily it really just has to do with almost the pace of the project. Sometimes mm-hmm. it can just feel so busy and overwhelming. And, you know, we've got a huge, amazing team of people. But it sometimes it's just bigger than we think it will be.
Well, you say, I mean, at the outset, you said it's basically become like a full-time job. Can you give us an idea what a typical day is for you, Hilary?
Sure. Well, it's challenging with young kids at home. My kids are 1 and 4.
Right.
And
okay.
So I try to fit in all my extra things at nap time and after bedtime, and so sometimes it means really late nights. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when we were getting this project really started and off the ground, that's when a lot of the work was happening. So we were doing a lot of meetings, preparing for meetings. The different core teams had to meet together to prepare their settlement plans. As well, we had our leadership team. So our prayer meetings, executive team meetings, our fundraising team meetings, we had a communications team. So all of these things were just, you know, great things happening, but just taking time.
Right. And what about yourself, Gloria?
A lot of emails, a lot of phone calls, meetings, still meetings happening. Mm-hmm. And when we are in the application process, there's a lot of paperwork to work on as well. Just coordinating people asking us, you know, who do I contact for this or where do I go for this? And just making sure everybody has the right information. So a lot of communications.
Mm-hmm. Is the red tape so insurmountable, though, that at times you think, my goodness, why am I even doing this? Or, this is your opportunity to say to people, look, you know, there might be a lot of red tape, but it's completely worth it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about that. And the different types of sponsorship have different types of paperwork. Mm-hmm. So the three that we have put in already, the paperwork for that was fairly simple and quick. For private sponsorships, it's a little bit more daunting, but there's a lot of support out there. So
that's what I was just going to say, is that it's not just us. It's literally like 100 people supporting us on the various, as we said, the leadership teams, and then mm-hmm. also these core teams. The teams whose families are here are also working in really quite full-time capacities because, as Gloria said, it was very busy when they first arrived. There was an appointment every day. Also, at one point, they needed to be driven to these appointments because they weren't in town. So various just challenges in that sense that we just, it's logistics, it's working with people, it's wanting to make sure that we're giving the very best to the family and wrestling mm-hmm. those things through. They're not always easy decisions. It's normally very complex decisions that are needing to be made. And so that obviously requires time. Anyone who's worked in a team knows you sit together and you wrestle it through and you hopefully make the best decision. Mm-hmm.
Can you at this stage see where things are going to settle? Do you see a horizon that looks a lot calmer waters? And where is that sitting?
We're actually starting to see that now. As these first two families have been here for a month and a half, they're starting, and the core teams have been amazing, so we haven't had to be really, really involved. So it is starting to slow down. I imagine when new families arrive, it'll gear up again. Mm-hmm. But Hillary was talking about, you know, at the beginning stages where we're getting all these things set up and organized, and that was a really, really busy part. So things for the most part are kind of being maintained at this point. So we are starting to see.
One of the things that's been really critical about this we didn't have talked about really is that these are faith-based groups. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe for a moment just talk about how this whole project integrates with your faith?
Hmm. Well, I think as we mentioned a little bit earlier is that for Gloria and I especially, we really feel that God has really called us to be in this capacity mm-hmm. and to do what we're doing. We feel, you know, we have on our website, and we also just had a Good Friday service where all the churches who are partnering in this initiative came together, to observe Good Friday. And we took up a special offering for this project where people had an opportunity to give and support. But really this this verse in Matthew 25, which says, it was the words of Jesus. He says, I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And so mm-hmm. when you did this for the least of these, you did this unto me. And we just feel that what a privilege it is mm-hmm. to get to serve these families in this way and to learn what we're learning along the way.
Gloria?
I would echo the same thing. I know for me, the idea of this project came a year and a half ago, and it was just something that I read that different churches had stepped up to sponsor. And for me, it felt like right at that moment, it was more than just an idea. It was a call. And I just felt like God was saying, I really want you to do something about this. Mm-hmm. And immediately I sent an email asking for information before. I thought if I start thinking about it, I might talk myself out of it because I knew that it was more than just an idea.
Right. That's something so many people often do. Now, we've talked about the various groups. There are families coming to Brighton and Grafton, I understand, there's a family. in town. Now, in town is probably not as insurmountable in terms of getting around. But what about people who, because they've come here, obviously they don't have a driver's license. That's obviously something they have to do. Is that something that's easy to do? How easy is that to do? And lastly, I mean, what about these folks who don't have access to transit or things like that? I mean, it must be difficult for them to get around and to adjust to that.
I imagine for those who don't, who are out of town, like Brighton and that sort of thing, where there's no public transportation, I imagine the core teams or the settlement teams there are going to be really busy. And I don't know if there's any plans in the county to help with some of that. But yeah, I think we're blessed that we are in a community that has public transportation. And yeah.
Well, maybe a big shout out to some of the car dealers out there. Maybe someone might want to consider donating a van to this organization to help move, bring these people to and from to do things like shopping,
or
have a doctor's appointment or to visit the Service Ontario or Service Canada office.
Or to ESL classes.
Is that something that's been tossed out, or are we throwing that gauntlet down for the first day?
I haven't heard anything, so you go for it.
Well, if you are out there listening, and I know there are a number of dealerships who listen here locally, and if you are, you know, this might be something you could consider doing. I mean, we've seen it happen, and we know that Community Care Northumberland, they on occasion will receive that kind of a gift from a local dealership. This is an important cause. It is a worthy cause. We have been talking about refugee resettlement here in Northumberland County, and as I said at the outset, folks, there are some 13 groups here sponsoring 18 to 20 families. They haven't all arrived yet. We believe between 5 and 6 families have arrived. The committee recognizes the need to coordinate all local efforts. This is the key here. We are working with coordination of all of these groups, Economic Development, Northumberland Tourism, Horizons of Friendship, MP Kim Rudd, MPP Lou Rinaldi, New Canadian Centre of Peterborough, the Northumberland United Way, the Northumberland Chamber of Commerce, the Help Center, the YMCA Northumberland, and, of course, the Watton Employment Services. With me in studio are Gloria Peter Matthies and Hilary Vili. They are both with Better Together Sponsorship Group, which is a partnership of 8 churches, including the Calvary Baptist Church, Church on a Hill, Coburg Alliance, Fellowship Baptist, Grace Christian Reformed, the Grace Evangelical Mission, Salvation Army, Coburg Community Center, St. Andrews Presbyterian, and I guess that's it for this group. But there are a number of groups throughout the county. Folks, you can go to the Northumberland County website, welcomenorthumberland.ca, and you can get all the information you need. If you want to participate, if you feel as though you have something to offer one of these groups, you're always looking for volunteers, I can assume, as well as donations, right?
Absolutely. And we do have a database that we send periodic updates out, email updates, and as well, we let people know when we have a need. So whether it's driving, ESL volunteers, other supports, we let people know and people can contact us.
So any idea when the next family may be arriving? If we got any kind of, does the government even let you know?
We have the third family. We sort of expected to have them here by now, but we just found out from the government that there is some processing that has to happen on the other end, and they said, the government said, that we don't know how long that's going to be. So.
Has that really been the biggest snail's pace aspect of this, is what's happening at the other end? Is that really what has been the holdup?
It depends, because our first two families came very quickly. So it's this third family that... It's the unknown. We just really don't know.
Mm-hmm. And we really do want to encourage the community, and even just as we talk amongst our group, really just not to be discouraged by some of those delays, but to continue the momentum as we talked about earlier. It's always those changes, those unknowns, but at the same time, we can't forget why we're doing this. And if it takes a little bit longer than we maybe would like it to, that doesn't mean that we should quit. It means that we just need to keep going, and that that end goal is that much more meaningful when it does happen.
Absolutely. Rob?
Any more events you'd like to tell us about that are coming up?
Well, tonight there's a call to prayer at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church. It's happening right now.
But started about half an hour ago.
Yep. Okay. We gather as churches just to pray for the project.
The Boston Pizza, if you go out for dinner, go to Boston Pizza, just right at the bottom of your bill, Better Together Refugee Sponsorship, give it to your server. And we don't have anything planned at the moment coming up.
We are having that breakfast with Kim Rudd, I think.
That's tomorrow.
That's not an open to the public event, though. That is specifically for the group, right?
Specifically for the all the Syrian newcomers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've organized that, Kim Rudd's office.
And what's amazing is the New Canadian Center, both Peterborough and in Coburg, are coordinating a lot of these types of get-togethers, potlucks, meet and greets, so that the families are really able to meet each other and integrate.
Have you met Miriam Monsef? Have you had an opportunity to meet with her? I know she's pretty active up in Peterborough with regards to this.
Not yet, but we've heard, great things.
Well, I want to thank you ladies for being here. As always, it's just a pleasure to talk with you and get an update and to keep the people of the community up to speed on what's going on. And to remind people that, you know, one of the concerns that's been raised, and you hear it in the U.S. all the time, that, you know, we're importing terrorists. And you know what? That's ludicrous, listeners. Okay? It's insane. If you are someone who is from an immigrant family, maybe your grandparents or maybe even your own family came from another country, you know, just a reminder, 100 years ago, if you were Irish and came to this country, you know, there were signs saying no Irish, no dogs. So we have come a long way, but I don't know that we've come that far. I want to thank you again, ladies, for being here. My guests have been Gloria Peters Matthews and Hillary Vealey. They are with Better Together Refugee Specialists, sponsorship rather. After this turn, you'll probably be specialists. And Rob Washburn, of course, my usual cohort here. And thank you very much for tuning in. In honor of the refugee resettlement, here is Jim Reeves and Patsy Cline with Welcome to My World, right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess, still happen now and then. Step into my heart, leave your cares behind. Welcome to my world, built with you in mind. Knock and the door will open. Seek and you will find. Ask and you'll be given. The key to this world of mine, I'll be waiting here with my arms unfurled, waiting just for you. Welcome to my world.